Good morning. Good morning. The meeting will come to order. Welcome to the November 5th, 2025 meeting of the Budget and Finance Committee. I'm Supervisor Connie Chan, Chair of the Committee. I'm joined by Vice Chair Supervisor Matt Dorsey, shortly by Supervisor Danny Sauter. Our clerk is Brent Haliba, and I would like to thank Sue Enals from SFGov TV for broadcasting this meeting. Mr. Clerk, do you have any announcement?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a friendly reminder to those in attendance to please make sure to silence all cell phones and electronic devices to prevent interruptions to our proceedings. Should you have any documents to be included as part of the file, they should be submitted to myself, the clerk. Public comment will be taken on each item on this agenda. When your item of interest comes up and public comment is called, please line up to speak on the west side of the chamber to your right, my left, along those curtains. And while not required to provide public comment, we do invite you to fill out a comment card and leave them on the tray by the television to your left and by the doors if you wish to be accurately recorded for the minutes. Alternatively, you may submit public comment in writing in either of the following ways. Email them to myself, the Budget and Finance Committee Clerk, at brent.jalipa@sfgov.org. If you submit public comment via email, it will be forwarded to the supervisors and also included as part of the official file. You may also send your written comments via U.S. Postal Service to our office in City Hall at 1 Dr. Carlton B. Goodlett Place, Room 244, San Francisco, California, 94102. And finally, due to our observance of Veterans Day, items acted upon today are expected to appear on the Board of Supervisors agenda of November 18th, unless otherwise stated. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. And again, reminding everyone, general public, and welcome, Supervisor Sauter, and that for all the items that have budget and legislative analyst reports, we typically will go to the department for presentation, and then we will go to the budget and legislative analyst for their reporting back, and then we can go to comments and questions from this body, and then we'll go to the public comment. And so with that, Mr. Clerk, please call item number one.
Yes, item number one is an ordinance amending the administrative code to create the Small Business Rezoning Construction Relief Program to provide financial support, including grants and loans, to businesses impacted by construction relating to the city residential rezoning program adopted in 2025 to 2026, establishing the Small Business Rezoning Construction Relief Fund to receive monies for the program, designating the Office of Small Business and Office of Economic and Workforce Development to administer the fund and the program and promulgate rules and regulations in furtherance of the program, and amending the Business and Tax Regulations Code to allow taxpayers to designate a portion of their gross receipt taxes for deposit in the fund. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we want to welcome Supervisor Myrna Malgar to the chamber. And this is an item that actually was heard and continue from last week. And due to substantive amendments, that it had to be continued. And the floor is yours, Supervisor Malgar.
Thank you, Chair Chan. I don't have much to add. Just to point out, since we did substantive amendments, I hope that you had a chance to review them. The amendments were meant to reflect the reality that for some small businesses, their profit margins are shorter because of the nature of their business. Their overhead is higher, and those businesses are restaurants, of which there are so many in our hospitality-based economy in San Francisco. So that's it, and I hope that you can support it, and I look forward to the partnership on all these issues.
Thank you. I don't see any name on the roster. I do not have additional question. Let's go to public comment on this item.
Yes, we are now opening public comment for this item. Number one, if we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, I would like to, with the support and urging of Supervisor Malgar, I would like to move this item to as now amended to full board with recommendation and a roll call, please.
And on that motion to forward the ordinance to the full board with a positive recommendation, Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Member Sauter.
Aye.
Sauter, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have three ayes.
The motion passes. Thank you, Supervisor. And Mr. Clerk, please call item number two.
Yes, item number two is a resolution authorizing the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development to execute a standard agreement with California Department of Housing and Community Development under the Infill Infrastructure Grant Program, Catalytic Qualifying Infill Area, for a total award of $45 million dispersed by CalHCD as a grant to the city for infrastructure improvements for the housing development related to the revitalization and master development of replacement public housing, affordable housing, and market rate housing, commonly known as the Sunnydale Hope SF development. The housing development related to the revitalization and master development of affordable and market rate housing, commonly known as Treasure Island Project, and the housing development related to the mixed-use urban village, including affordable and market rate housing, commonly known as the India Basin development, for the period starting on the execution date of the standard agreement through June 30th, 2031, and any and all other documents required or deemed necessary or appropriate. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. And today we have the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development here.
Good morning, members of Budget and Finance Committee. My name is Robert Baca. I'm the Joint Development Director of Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development. I do have a slide. Okay, so today I'm here to present file 251054. It's an accept and expand resolution for infill infrastructure grant, also known as IIG funds, for $45 million. In 2023, the City of San Francisco responded to a state-issued RFP and was awarded $45 million to support infrastructure improvements. The city plans to apply these funds to India Basin, Sunnydale Hope SF, and Treasure Island. The first project is India Basin. It's led by Build SF and the BMB company, who's the lead for the affordable housing component. It's planned for a total of 1,575 new homes, of which 25% will be affordable units, 209,000 square feet of commercial space, and 14 acres of public space, including transit improvements. The part that we're referring to for IIG application purposes is India Basin Phase 1. And so part of the application included 392 total units, of which 181 are affordable units, 45,000 square feet of commercial retail, and 5 acres of public parks, and new streets, utilities, and transportation improvements. Right now, tied with this phase, which we included in this award, is Treasure Island E1.2 Senior, which is 100 units of senior housing funded with HUD 202. And currently, there's a tied MOCD pre-development loan, and we also plan to provide a gap loan. PAD and utilities through Stage 2 infrastructure, and then there'll be shared site access and a fire road with behavioral health. The second project is E1.2 Behavior Health, which is 6 stories, 68,000 square foot facility, totaling 256 beds. Currently, there's funding from DPH, a Prop A bond, TIDA development subsidy, and CDSS-CCEE. So right now, the plan is to start that in 2027, but obviously the critical path is PAD delivery. There's a lot of infrastructure work going on right now. And this grant would actually pay for... Let's pull it up really quick. And this grant would actually pay for Sado conduit installation, the Yorba Buena Island multi-use path, and then Eastside Commons infrastructure improvements, which is tied to IC 4.3, which is a third project, and that consists of 150 family units and a child care center. They applied for ASIC this spring, and we're waiting to hear back if that project was awarded HCD ASIC funding, hopefully in December. There's currently a tied MOCD pre-development loan, and we also plan to fund a gap. Thank you for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions, and we also accept all the clerk changes on the resolution.
Thank you, and Vice Chair Dorsey.
Thank you, Chair Chan. I do want to express my gratitude to everyone who has worked on this, including the state. Representing Treasure Island, one of the things that I'm aware of is that we have a lot of people there who are experiencing the issues that play out because they don't have the infrastructure. I know Treasure Island has had I think more than 500 power outages since 1997. It's four times higher than the citywide average. There's, I think, often when we talk about infrastructure, you know, there aren't people there. But I think I know for my district and for the neighborhood that I represent there, there's a lot of great things happening. Obviously, there's a lot of people have been waiting a long time for this, so I appreciate the work on this. I'd like to be at it as a co-sponsor.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any other name on the roster. I do not have additional questions. Thank you so much for your work. And
thank you.
Thank you. And we'll go to public comments on this item.
Yes, if we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee regarding this item number two, now is your opportunity to approach the lectern. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. What is your will, Vice Chair?
Thank you, Chair Chan. I would like to make a motion to send this resolution out to the full Board of Supervisors with our positive recommendation.
Wonderful. Roll call, please.
And on that motion by Vice Chair Dorsey to forward this resolution to the full Board with a positive recommendation, Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Member Sauter.
Aye.
Sauter, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have three ayes.
The motion passes. And Mr. Clerk, please call item number three.
Yes, item number three. Is a resolution approving for purposes of Internal Revenue Code of 1986 as amended the issuance and sale of revenue obligations by the California Enterprise Development Authority in an aggregate principal amount not to exceed $5 million to refinance the cost of acquisition, rehabilitation, improvement, installation, and equipping of a portion of administrative facilities owned and operated by Mission Economic Development Agency. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And today we have our controllers here.
Good morning, Chair Chan and Supervisors. Keith Savini from the Controller's Office of Public Finance. Also present is Elaine Yee from the Mission Economic Development Agency, if there are any questions on the project. Just a reminder for the committee and members of the public, the Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act, or TEFRA, allows the tax exemption of interest on certain types of debt issued through joint powers authorities. In this case, the proposed financing is to be issued through the California Enterprise Development Authority, or CEDA, which is a joint powers authority to which the city and county of San Francisco is a participating member. The authority is authorized to issue bonds, notes, COPs, or other forms of debt, including refinancing previously issued debt. Federal tax law requires that the governing body of the jurisdiction in which the project is located approve the financing and the project after providing the opportunity for a duly noticed public hearing. The public hearing notice was published on the Controller's Office of Public Finance website on October 7th, and the hearing was held by telephone on October 14th. There were no comments from the public through the public hearing process or received by email. The purpose of this project, the proceeds from the sale of the obligations in an amount not to exceed $5 million will be loaned to Mission Resource Center, LLC, whose sole member is the Mission Economic Development Agency, or META. The proceeds will be used to refinance the balance of a 2015 loan that funded the cost of improvements of a 21,000-square-foot multi-story commercial building at 2301 Mission Street, which is owned by Mission Resource Center and leased to and operated by META. The loan will be repaid entirely from payments by Mission Resource Center under the loan agreement, and the city and county has no obligation to repay the loan. I'd also note that the 2015 financing went through a similar TEFRA process. Founded in 1973, the Mission Economic Development Agency is a community economic development corporation located in the Mission District. They help families open and improve small businesses, purchase homes, and prevent foreclosures, build credit and savings while reducing debt, access technology, and find sustaining jobs. META works to improve economic and social conditions for San Francisco's low and moderate income residents with primarily Latino families as META's constituents. They're located in District 9, and Supervisor Fielder is the sponsor of the resolution. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. I do not have additional questions. Thank you so much for your work on this. We will go to public comment on this item.
Yes, we're now opening public comment for this item number three. If we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, I would like to move this item to full board with recommendation and a roll call, please.
And on the motion to forward to the full board with a positive recommendation, Vice Chair Dorsey. Dorsey, aye. Member Sauter. Sauter, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have three ayes.
The motion passes. Mr. Clerk, please call item number four.
Item number four is a resolution approving amendment number three to the airport advertising lease between Clear Channel Outdoor LLC, doing business as Clear Channel Airports, as tenant in the city and county, acting by and through its airport commission as landlord, for the addition of premises solely for the promotion of large sporting events and establishing a new rent structure for those locations. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And today we have SFO here.
Good morning. Deanna Volek from SFO. The airport is seeking your approval for amendment number three to an existing lease with Clear Channel Outdoor LLC, operating as Clear Channel Airports. This modification would add premises solely for the promotion of large sporting events and establishes a new rent structure equal to 65% of gross revenue generated for those locations. Clear Channel Outdoor, Inc. currently operates the advertising concession at SFO under the Airport Advertising Program lease. The lease has 148 individual advertising locations for static and digital units within the terminals and the rental car center, and rent is a minimum annual guarantee currently equal to $14,205,786. Due to several large sporting events occurring next year, such as the 2026 Super Bowl and 2026 FIFA World Cup, the airport would like to add new locations that would be desirable for welcome messaging and advertising, along with a revenue share rent structure. As with all advertising installations, prior airport approval is required to ensure design and messaging standards. Clear Channel will install, manage, operate, and display commercial advertising using various media types. The BLA has recommended approval, and I am joined by our Revenue Development and Management team for any questions.
Item four is a resolution that approves an amendment to an airport lease with Clear Channel. Under the lease, the airport leases property to Clear Channel, which they use to display advertising. We summarize the lease terms on page three of the report. There's no change to the lease term, which ends October 2027. And under the existing lease, Clear Channel pays a minimum guaranteed rent to the airport of over $10 million. But there's no percentage rent structure, which is unusual for airport leases. This amendment adds a percentage rent structure to spaces specifically for advertising for large sporting events. The airport would get 65% of the revenue from those advertising spaces. The airport estimates that it will generate $1.3 million in revenue over the next 2 years. 15% of that would go to the general fund, so that's about $200,000 for the general fund over that time. And we note as a policy consideration that we actually recommended the board reject this lease in 2013 because it did not contain a percentage rent structure. We went back and tested what the revenues to the airport would have been over the past 10 years had it maintained the prior rent percentage rent structure, and we determined that the airport would have received $20.6 million more revenue over the 10-year period than they received under this lease, which had no percentage rent structure. And $3 million of that would have gone to the general fund. So we're recommending approval of this item, but also recommending to the airport that they include a percentage rent structure in the, when they reprocure the advertising service going forward.
Thank you. Help me understand when are we going to, if we are, and if you are, and when, if so, that you will reprocure this contract, and whether then you will, that SFO will reconsider.
Yes, it was supposed to go up for RFP, but because of COVID, it's been extended with the other leases. This current lease expires October 2027, and we are fully prepared to go to a full RFP process. In terms of the thinking of future, with the previous original lease in 2013, the airport director at the time did not want a superfluous amount of advertising and thought because of percentage rent that would encourage them to put advertising everywhere. But I'm going to defer to my colleague from RDM to talk about our future plans.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Cheryl Brennan, Director of Revenue Development and Management. So the Clear Channel contract does expire in October of 2027, but we're going to get a running start for a variety of reasons, and we plan to issue an RFP first quarter of next year. And we will absolutely have the financial structure be the greater of a MEG or percentage rent. It's a different time period at the airport, and we're very interested in maximizing revenue off of this contract. There's a lot of upside to be had, a lot of new locations to add. That wasn't our desire, our aesthetic desire 12 or 13 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I wish that we also had this conversation like right now, or I should say earlier, when we know that the city is going to take on Super Bowl and FIFA, like hosting events in both Santa Clara area and then basically in the Bay Area, which is really creating SFO such a hub for travel in 2026. Well, for me, I think also, not to mention, there's also going to be the Pokemon World Champion in August. So that's what my family really is like focusing on, besides also Super Bowl, of course. But, you know, just kind of just some of the thoughts of like wishing we have more opportunity in terms of generating more revenues. I look forward to seeing perhaps there are other opportunities in the very same period, and that the airport, I'm sure, will figure out ways, and I do look forward to that on top of, you know, existing contract with Clear Channel. And look forward to seeing that and hearing more of that, what you're going to do for 2027. Help me understand when and then you intend the RFP is going to go out, if it expires in October 2027.
So we'll issue the RFP between January and March of 2026. So it will be awarded next year, which, you know, puts it award a year before expiration. But that gives us time to plan the new installations. It also gives us some comfort because we're opening Terminal 3 West, our latest renovation, in 27, it just gives us some comfort. If the incumbent wins, they're probably comfortable installing all their new locations in Terminal 3 West. If they don't, then we'll cross that bridge, early, so that we can get, if there's a new company that comes in, we could have them install the advertising in Terminal 3 West earlier, before the actual expiration of Clear Channel. We just don't want to open Terminal 3 West with empty advertising locations.
Of course. Thank you. We appreciate it. I don't see, I don't have any additional question. I don't see any name on roster. Let's go to public comments on this item.
Yes, if we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee regarding this item number 4, now is your opportunity. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, I would like to send this item to a full board with recommendation and a roll call, please.
And on the motion to forward to the full board with a positive recommendation, Vice Chair Dorsey. Dorsey, aye. Member Sauter. Sauter, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have 3 ayes.
The motion passes.
Thank you so much. And we are also excited about Pokemon, too.
I'm glad. Thank you. And Mr. Clerk, please call item number 5.
Item number 5 is a resolution approving a commercial lease agreement between the city and county and San Francisco CNC, doing business as Mel's Drive-In, for the retail space located at 801 Mission Street and the 5th and Mission Garage for an initial 5-year term that will result in an estimated $1.9 million in revenue and 1 5-year option to extend the lease, effective upon approval of this resolution. Madam Chair.
Thank you, and we have SFMTA here.
Good morning, Chair Chan, Supervisor Dorsey, Supervisor Sauter, Mr. Clerk. Thank you so much for making time for us this morning and fitting us into your busy current workloads. We deeply appreciate the opportunity to be before you today to discuss this lease agreement. I am going to hand it over to our fully capable real estate manager, Kasaya Tang, who will be walking you through this presentation.
Certainly.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chan, Supervisor Sauter, Vice Chair, sitting in. Thank you. And Supervisor Dorsey. Let me begin by saying that this is a historic lease for an anchor tenant at Fifth and Mission. And while we are discussing a new lease agreement, we discovered some information from the previous real estate administration of incomplete work. And so I'd like to address that before I get into the details of the Mills lease proposal. Back in 2020, while the city was undergoing the pandemic and shelter in place was ordered, the mayor then, Mayor Breed, issued an ordinance saying that the city should be forgiving rent, providing an abatement, since the shelter in place had drastically reduced the traffic and business potential for many of the businesses downtown and throughout the city, as well as the country. In 2021, we verbally effectuated about 25 of these agreements. And at that time, the perspective was that we would address them as they came up for renewal. I don't know exactly what happened between that time and now, but we only discovered this last week. And so, having discovered this, we have formulated a plan to address it, and we would like to discuss that with you now. In addition to this Mel's lease, there is one more lease with TADS Incorporated that is very similar in structure and will also need the Board of Supervisors' approval. In addition, we have 15 other leases that do not require the Board approval because it does not hit the threshold of Section 9.1108. However, we will work diligently with the City Attorney's Office to formally have those amendments memorialized. However, our timeline with the holidays would be to come before the board in January 2026, ideally, to bring TADS before you, and then work internally with the City Attorney's Office to bring the remaining 15 leases to current amended status, and that would hopefully occur at the end of the first quarter by April 2026. So that is our proposed timeline. Along with that, we will be developing more internal and written policies and procedures that seem to be lacking at this time. I am fairly new to this post, not that it is an excuse for the agency, but now that I'm aware of some of these issues, I'm beginning to formulate a plan to address, and we are committed to bringing these to legal amendment status. So, with that, I'd like to bring up the real issue we are brought here today, which is to discuss Mel's lease. And this would be, next slide, please, for an initial term of 5 years. It would bring us just under $2 million in revenue, and there would be a potential extension option for another 5 years. If you recall, maybe some of us don't, Mills first opened in 1947. There are four locations throughout the city. They are known for late night hours, weekends, family meals, and has been an anchor tenant for us at Fifth and Mission Garage. The original lease was signed in 2000 by a downtown parking corporation. It was then transferred to the SFMTA in 2013. If you look at the three-year average, it's just under $400,000 for revenue. Based on the current structure of 8% gross rents, we would be bringing in approximately that same amount. It is very close to what we were looking at over the past few years, and closer to also the pre-pandemic gross receipts levels. So we are seeing improvement in the economy slowly but surely. If there is any sublet or assignment, we have negotiated to add additional terms for that. And so long as Mel's business is good and the city's business is good, the MTA should also benefit as well as the city. We are bringing this before the board because it is revenue generating over $1 million and does invoke Charter Section 9.118. Therefore, we request that the board approve of this lease amendment as it benefits the city and be assured that the SFMTA remains committed to bringing the other leases into compliance. Thank you. That's the end of my presentation.
Thank you.
Item 5 is a resolution that would retroactively approve a new lease agreement that MTA will have with San Francisco CNC, which does business as Mel's Diner. Mel's would occupy or continue to occupy a space at the 5th and Mission Garage. And the lease has an initial 5-year term with 1 5-year option to extend. We summarized the lease terms on page 10 of our report. The MTA would get 8% of gross revenues each month as rent for this lease. The 8% does seem reasonable when we compare that to other city leases with restaurants, though the lack of a fixed component to the rent did feel unusual relative to other city leases. We also note that based on historical revenues, because they've been on this 8% structure for a couple years now, MTA is projecting that at least over the initial 5-year term, if Mel is able to sustain their revenues at their current levels, that the lease would generate $1.9 million for MTA over 5 years, which would be used to fund transportation operations. We also, in conversations with the department, we identified several internal control weaknesses in the historical management of MTA's real estate division, which include not documenting lease transactions, not having any policies and procedures governing the division. So, for example, what the standard lease terms should be for commercial leases, when the lease would trigger an RFP or a process to work with a broker. And for that reason, we do have several recommendations in this report to establish policies and procedures that address those items that I just mentioned, to document all property transactions, and do so as soon as possible. I think, for any organization, this would be an urgent set of recommendations, but I think they take on a special significance given MTA's structural budget deficit and the fact that they're undertaking very high risk and complex property development in the next several years, for example, like Potrero Yard. So I do consider these very urgent recommendations. And I also note in the report that there's new management at MTA's real estate division, both at the deputy director and at the manager level. So that's an opportunity, given the recent reorganization, to modernize the division's operating procedures.
Thank you. I mean, certainly it's alarming, according to the budget and legislative analyst report, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm trying to understand the discrepancy between that in the report, it mentioned approximately 50 others leases that require, that have received like rent forgiveness, but does not actually, they do not have any written lease amendments. And but then I think you mentioned 15, that is what you're focusing on, hopefully by April 2026. That's a problem for me, that timeline. And so I wanna understand how and how long is it gonna take for your division to fix all 50? I think today I wanna be supportive of this lease because we got to start working on this, right? And so this is like a first step to fix the Mel's Drive-In, and I can understand that TET is coming, and I can understand that, your priority is another 15 by April 2026, but you actually have 50 in total.
Actually, I'd like to correct the record. Please. It's not 5-0. It's 1-5 in addition to the TADS and the MELS lease. We have many properties, but only 25 businesses accepted and some businesses left before. So we only have 17 in total, 1-7.
So you have 17 leases that have no written lease amendment?
Not formalized, correct.
And how many lease with business or commercial property that you have right now total?
We have approximately 40.
You have approximately 40. And that out of which only 17 that has no written lease amendment.
Correct.
Got it. And what about the remaining of those that you may, did they actually have any lease amendments at all? Or the reason why they do not have written lease, they are not required to go through the process because they did not receive rent.
Referring to the 15 additional leases that we need?
No, I'm referring the remaining, well, I guess like.
Those were not offered or did not accept any rent relief.
23.
So yes, it was
so,
not.
So remaining of the 23 or 25 did not, or 23 correct. Did not accept.
Not subject to this.
Yeah, not subject to lease amendments because they did not accept loan
rent
forgiveness.
Was not abated, correct.
Could you walk us through? I don't think I'm going to go back to what happened. I think instead I'm going to look forward to see how are you going to tackle that 15?
So it's approximately 3 or 4 per month if we can get it done by the end of the quarter. And that seems like it's still going to be a challenge for the city attorney's workload. That is probably our largest challenge for this particular task because it requires city attorney input and work on each of these agreements. That is really the only major time obstacle. Of course, we need to also reach out and make sure that these tenants are agreeable to the terms.
What happens if they don't?
It's just like any other negotiation. We have to make concessions on both sides to come to an agreement.
Because technically it's retroactive, isn't it?
Well, we'd want to bring these leases current, up to date. And so we may make reference to what occurred, but it would be looking forward. Just as this is a new lease with MELS, we're looking forward and we're not referring back to the original lease or terms necessarily.
Interesting. Great. Vice Chair Dorsey.
Thank you, Chair Chan. I want to express my appreciation to the BLA for its work on this and highlighting things that we need to make sure that we get right, and I appreciate MTA's commitment to getting this right. I think the good news for SFMTA is that your financial needs are going to be priority number one for many of us in next year's election, at a time when the viability of our transit system, which includes MTA but isn't limited to MTA, is regarded as essential to our economic recovery. The bad news for SFMTA is that your financial needs are going to be priority number one, and there's going to be a lot of scrutiny that is put upon you. And I just urge everybody we can't have unforced errors. This is going to be really important. I represent a downtown district. We have to get things right. If and when we go to voters to ask them to dig down deep, they need to have confidence that their money is going to be well spent and carefully scrutinized. This is really important. Beyond that, there's as a District 6 supervisor, this is an area that is under some distress. So I appreciate it. I'm supportive of this, and I really appreciate that MELS is there. I appreciate that there have been some vacancies. I did want to ask, what is the current situation at the 5th and Mission Garage in terms of?
We're currently in the process of terminating the occupation for 2 of those spaces.
Okay.
And then hopefully we will be able to release those.
Okay. Yeah, I'm hoping that I know that with Bloomingdale's and some issues at the San Francisco Center. It's a difficult time right now. I have some optimism about the Metreon and some other things that hopefully will contribute to a resurgence in this area. I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm grateful to Mel's and just appreciative of everybody's commitment to making sure that we get things right. I'm happy to support this.
Thank you.
Supervisor Sauter.
Thank you, Chair. This is clearly you know, something that you're having to clean up, and I recognize that you're coming into this. So thank you for getting us back on track here. And clearly a lot of mistakes were made to folks that were in your seat prior. So thank you for cleaning it up. Of the, sounds like 15 more leases to kind of sort through that had this verbal agreement, this lease with Mel's you're proposing to have at a percentage of gross sales, but I think you're indicating that for those other 15, how do you anticipate that going? Will it be a discussion? Are you trying to get them to adopt one model or the other? How do you anticipate that happening?
We may continue with the current model of percentage receipts because the economy has not yet rebounded enough to have the full faith of the businesses that they can provide a base rent. So we may be negotiating that point, but it may follow similarly to Mel's.
How does this compare to practices with other real estate in the city, and then also maybe zooming out, you know, others in your industry and other cities?
You know, I believe it's probably quite different from the airport or the port, and it's also very different because of the location. MTA has various parking garages throughout the city and in downtown, which is, unfortunately, the mall is 93% vacant right now. So it's very hard hit. With the airport, they have a closed environment that's very safe and secure. People are in transit going through the airport, and so they have what I would say is a steadier source of business and traffic. The port is also a tourist destination, and their properties are also quite different from what MTA has. And so while I understand an RFP is probably preferred and it sounds very good, it is not always applicable to the MTA's real estate portfolio because of our various locations and, truthfully, the limitations of some of our spaces. So I don't know that it's an apples-to-apples comparison. It might be more of an apples and oranges and bananas comparison. But I understand the concern that we are getting market rate and trying to maximize the revenue for the city. And that is also our shared goal. And in this way, we're trying to keep the spaces occupied, when it's very difficult in some of these areas to do that, and also allow the businesses to sustain themselves and grow, if possible.
Okay. Thank you. And I think we all want to be partners in helping you get this back on track. It's important. Thanks.
Thank you.
I think, actually, I don't know if I really completely agree that that is what the port is doing. I definitely think SFO has different strategy in terms of build out their portfolio with concierge and different kind of, like, and with airline or with retail spaces. I think they have different strategy with it. I definitely think, though, Port has a different strategy in not utilizing an RFP. In fact, it was a discussion that we had with SF Port. They actually use a broker and a specific broker partnership to identify spaces appropriate for port spaces. They have cruise terminal, they have restaurant spaces, they have retail spaces. I think there are really different needs, and storage and in industrial spaces. I would strongly encourage you to consider just different approach, but most importantly, if I may, a backup plan. A backup plan in the next 6 months while you undergo these negotiations to try to bring to date these leases. I would strongly encourage to also have alternatives should these space become vacant. Then what is your next step to fill them? Because your negotiation, try to bring them to market rate rent, is not successful. So for some of these spaces, due to, like you said, you know, they're not the typical retail space or whatever commercial space that, because of, again, the situation of your use addition to on top of or adjacent to your commercial space. So I look forward to hearing and more of that when you return in January with the TET lease to kind of give us a little bit initial update.
Just to speak further on that point, I am working with the TJPA, and they have an RFP for brokerage services, and we're trying to piggyback off of that for the spaces that we have in that area.
Great.
Because, you know, it is based on that location for their brokerage. But, yes, we are obviously looking at alternatives. Thank you.
Of course. And so we'd love to see that report back along with your TET lease agreements when you return in January.
Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no more questions, and let's go to public comment on this item.
We are now opening public comment for this item number 5. If you have any members of the public who wish to address this committee.
Yeah, I'm Matt Worth. I am counsel for Mel's Drive-In. I don't have a presentation for you, but I wanted to introduce Gabriel Mendez, who's one of the owners of SFC&C. He's here if you have questions. I think just listening to the discussion, you know, I would just really encourage the city, not only for Mel's, but for all of downtown, you know, that an 8% gross rent agreement puts you guys in partnership with business, and it's the direction the city needs to go in. Unless you have questions about the lease, I would just thank the city attorney's office for their professionalism in negotiating all this, and hope you'll approve the lease. So thank you.
Thank you much for addressing this committee. And with no other speakers, Madam Chair, that completes our queue.
Thank you. And seeing no more public comment is now closed. Vice Chair Dorsey.
It occurs to me that I also forgot to thank the city attorney for their work in this. And I know, especially when it comes to leases, there's a lot of unsung heroes that are doing this work. So my expression of appreciation to our deputy city attorney and everybody at the city attorney's office who's doing that work.
Thank you. Colleagues, I think today we are all in support of the Mel's Drive-In lease itself. And what I think, thank you so much, SFMTA, especially for the new staff that is at the real estate division for your work on this. I think, though, due to the nature of how it came about, meaning the lag time between what it was during COVID to now what it is, with an overwhelming long period without documentation and without approval from the city attorney in terms of the lease amendments and the recommendation of the budget and legislative analysts. I think it should be send a signal to our colleagues at the full board, letting them know this is a problem. But I think that SFMTA is working to fix. Again, I do not think that this is our lessees, but truly is really on the city. So it's not a reflection on Mel's Drive-In, but SFMTA. And that I would like to make the motion to move this forward, but without recommendation at this time. Again, not a reflection on Mel's Drive-In, our partnership with them, but much more on SFMTA, got to get it together. And hopefully by the time you come back with TEDS, we will have more progress made. So with that, a motion to move this to full board without recommendation and a roll call, please.
And on that motion, that this resolution be referred to the full board without recommendation. Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Member Sauter.
Aye.
Sauter, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have 3 ayes.
The motion passes. I also do want to indicate that I will be voting in support of this lease at full board. Thank you. With that, Mr. Clerk, please call item number 6.
Yes, item number 6 is a resolution approving the 4th Amendment between the City and County, acting by and through the Office of Contract Administration and Listec International Limited for Class A Biosolids Management Services for an increased amount of approximately $20.7 million and a total not to exceed amount of approximately $36.7 million to extend the term by 2 years from June 30th, 2027 for a total term of July 1st, 2022 through June 30th, 2029, and to authorize the Office of Contract Administration to make necessary non-material changes to the amendment prior to its final execution by all parties that do not materially increase the obligations nor liabilities to the city and are necessary or advisable to effectuate the purposes of the agreement. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And today we have the City Administrator's Office.
Good morning, Chair Chan, Supervisors Dorsey and Sauter. I'm Sophie Hayward, and I'm here from the Office of the City Administrator on behalf of the Office of Contract Administration. And we are seeking a recommendation of approval to amend the existing contract with Listec International Limited for biosolids waste management. The amendment we seek would increase the not-to-exceed amount to $36.67 million and to extend the term by 2 years to June 20th, 2029. Just by way of background, the city's wastewater is treated at two facilities, the Southeast Treatment Plant and the Oceanside Water Pollution Control Plant. Those treatment plants convert our waste into what is known as Class B biosolids, and then at that point, Listec International is responsible for converting that Class B product into what is known as Class A biosolids, things like liquid fertilizer and compost. That conversion of our biosolids into Class A products allows us to actually send less waste to landfills because we produce compost and fertilizer, and that complies with state law SB 1383. This contract is used exclusively by the PUC's wastewater enterprise, and the contract was executed based on a low bid solicitation by OCA conducted in March of 2022. The contract was awarded to Listec, which was the only contractor to submit a qualified bid by the deadline. Our request to extend the term as well as the not to exceed amount is based on the average monthly spend and the estimated annual usage. We request that the committee recommend approval of this contract amendment to allow the SFPUC to continue to procure this critical waste management service in compliance with the requirements of State Bill 1383. That concludes my presentation, but I'm joined today by representatives of OCA and the PUC if you have additional questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 6 is a resolution that approves an amendment to a contract that the Office of Contract Administration procured with Listec International. The amendment increases the contract value from $15.9 to $36.7 million and then exercises an existing option to extend the agreement from June 2027 to June 2029. The contract basically allows PUC's wastewater enterprise to divert biosolids from landfill to agricultural uses. Listec takes those products and processes them so that they can be safely used in agriculture. PUC is doing this to comply with the state law that as of 2024 required 70 utilities to divert 75% of biosolids away from landfill. The PUC reports that it's actually diverting 100% of its biosolids, and this contract is about 70% of the total biosolids that the wastewater division, produces every year. In terms of fiscal impact, this contract is about a $5.1 million a year cost, which then drives the increase in the not-to-exceed amount by about $20 million. We summarize the basis for the contract budget on page 20 of our report, and note that the contract is funded by wastewater ratepayers. We recommend approval of item 6.
Thank you. I don't have any additional questions. Vice Chair Dorsey.
Thank you, Chair Chan. I guess this is just a larger issue. I'm always concerned when we do a bid solicitation and there's one bidder. And I'm not sure if this would be a BLA question or are there other... Is there anything we're doing in our bid solicitations that, or could do in our bid solicitations to improve the competitiveness of our competitive bidding?
Good morning. My name is Lynn Rapola. I'm with the Office of Contract Administration. The reason why there was only one bidder in 2022 is because there's a very limited field of suppliers that work in this market. In fact, there was another supplier at one point, Denali, who chose to exit the business. So there are really not that many suppliers that can do what wastewater needs to be done. That's the primary reason. But our office makes a very strong effort in reaching out to all suppliers.
Are there other wastewater enterprises that use other providers, or is this one that provides to other jurisdictions?
Joanne? I have with us Joanne Yee, who's with wastewater, who's probably more equipped to answer that question.
Good morning, supervisors. That's a great question. So this contract is specifically for LISTEC to convert Class B biosolids to Class A biosolids. We do have a separate contract with Synagro for land application, so that's directly applying the Class B biosolids onto the fields. So in that sense, we do try to diversify, but land application is a short season. Once it starts raining, once the fields get wet, it depends on the farmers too. So it's limited. In terms of this specific contract, LISTEC is open year-round, so it provides our ability to send it on weekends, on in the winter, whenever it rains.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. And with that, we will go to public comments on this item.
Yes, we're opening public comment on this item number 6. If we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, I would like to move this item to full board with recommendation and a roll call, please.
And on that motion to forward to the full board with a positive recommendation, Vice Chair Dorsey. Dorsey, aye. Member Sauter.
Aye.
Sauter, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have 3 ayes.
The motion passes. Mr. Clerk, please call item number 7.
Yes, item number 7 is a resolution authorizing the Sheriff's Office to enter into a contract with Aramark Correctional Services, Inc. for jail food services for a total contract amount not to exceed $22 million and a term of 5 years to commence on November 1st, 2025, with 2 2-year options to renew. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we have our Sheriff's Office here.
Good morning, Chair Chan, Vice Chair Dorsey, Supervisor Sauter. My name is Patrick Leung. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Sheriff's Office. This morning, we're asking for the committee's recommendation, positive recommendation for our Aramark Jail Food Service contract. Just as an overview, Aramark has provided food services for the San Francisco County Jail since 2012. The new contract that's being proposed is for $22 million. There was a competitive bid solicitation per Admin Code Chapter 21 requirements. We did receive 2 bids for which Aramark was the highest scored proposal and the awarded vendor. The term of the contract is from November 1st, 2025 until October 31st, 2030. The contract also incorporates good food purchasing practices, and it adheres to the Board and State of Community Corrections Title 15 requirements. Within the contract, there's a provision that the pricing will be held firm for the first 24 months of the agreement. Some of the included services, the Aramark is to provide 3 meals daily for inmates and also staff at all the county jails. The service also includes coffee service and garbage service, and included within the contract is their Into Work program, which is a training and certificate program that trains incarcerated individuals of safety food handling, and there's a credentialing program that's based off of ServSafe, which is a credentialing program administered by the U.S. National Restaurant Association. This last slide kind of shows the jail count patterns for the last 8 years or so. And what you see within this graph is that the jail population for the last several years have increased. And right now, the jail population is basically equivalent to what it was pre-pandemic. I do want to make one note that the BLA had made a recommendation for us to amend the contract terms so that the option years within the contract is consistent with what is stated in the RFP, and we did make that change. If any members of the committee has any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you.
Item 7 is a resolution that approves a new contract between the Sheriff and Aramark Correctional Services. This contract has a 5-year term that begins November 1st and a not-to-exceed amount in the resolution of $22 million. Under the contract, the Aramark provides food for the jail system, both for inmates and for staff who work there. We summarize the contract budget on page 25 of the report. You'll see the $22 million is sufficient to pay for the contract costs over that 5 years, assuming no escalation. So the contract locks in food prices for 2 years. But if there's any escalation in food prices beyond that, which is allowed under the contract based on CPI, the sheriff may have to come back to this board to request an increase in the not-to-exceed amount, even before the option to extend is exercised. We're also noting that there's no cost increase between the current food service and the new food service going forward. So this is about a $4.8 million a year contract. This cost is funded by the general fund, and that cost will basically remain the same for the next 2 years so long as the jail population remains the same. And we do have a recommendation just to align the contract's total term with the total term that was advertised in the RFP. And it sounds like the sheriff agrees with that.
Thank you. I have two questions specifically about this. I think one is the most recent we passed the good food policy. How has, and if I understand correctly, I think Aramark has been consistent since 2012, but could you just elaborate a little bit about, as we consider extending this contract, how will Aramark be able to comply to the good food policy that recently passed?
Sure. Thank you for that question. The good food purchasing provision that was included in the prior contract and it's carried over to this contract. We did have a email from, apologize, I don't remember the person's name, but the point of contact for the good food purchasing program. We have been touching base with them. We're going to work with good food purchasing program and also with a vendor on the next steps on any changes that's needed for this contract. At least for what Aramark has been able to achieve, some of the highlights from the existing program, they've reduced processed meats by 5% within the proteins that they've provided. They've increased the number of they've reduced the number of added sugars by 10% of the daily value. Some of the options that they've also provided, they've increased the number of healthy beverage options. They're providing 1% milk during different meal times. And we do expect to continue working with the vendor and also with good food purchasing. I think one important highlight is within the old contract, the good food purchasing program, the standards has changed from what the original contract was, the one that just expired, to what the current standards are. And so for the sheriff's office, we do intend to work with the good food purchasing staff and with the vendor on making sure that any necessary changes are needed to better align what services are being provided with some of the practices and recommendations of the Good Food Purchasing Program standards.
Thank you. And as you mentioned about ServSafe as a training program, that looks like it, the requirement is to have a minimum 42 incarcerated individuals to be trained and certified. Is that an annual number or the entire of the entirety of the contract?
I would have to check back. I know that the 45 was a minimum number, but I'd have to check on the details on that.
Would love to. I'm supportive of the contract today, and in the events that it does get approved by this body today and out of to full board, would love to get a little bit of information from this today till we vote on it, which is not next week, but the week after, yeah. To have both let us know like how many individuals actually were trained and certified from the previous contract and the projection of what we expect to see with the upcoming contract term.
Sure.
Thank you. With that, I don't have any additional question. Let's go to public comment on this item.
Yes, we're opening public comment for this item number seven, if we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, I would like to first amend the legislation as proposed by the Budget and Legislative Analyst, amending a two-year options to renew to one-year options to renew, and then to send the amended legislation to full board with recommendation and a roll call, please, on that motion.
And on that motion. To amend the resolution to correct the extension options from 2 2-year options to 2 1-year options, and to forward this resolution to the full board with a positive recommendation as amended. Vice Chair Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Member Sauter.
Aye.
Sauter, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have 3 ayes.
The motion passes. And Mr. Clerk, please call item number 8.
Yes, item number 8 is a resolution retroactively authorizing the police department to accept and expend a grant in the amount of approximately $654,000 from the Board of State and Community Corrections for the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Equipment and Training Program to procure equipment and services for the Criminology Laboratory, with the project period beginning on October 1st, 2025 through September 30th, 2026. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And today we have our police department here.
Good morning, Chair Chan, Vice Chair Dorsey, and Supervisor Sauter. My name is Mark Powell. I'm here from the San Francisco Police Department. I'm the Forensic Services Director, and we're just hoping for approval to accept and expend the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant. So I'll just take you through that a little bit. The funding purpose is for equipment and training for $654,000. $654,609. What we're going to use it for is to purchase equipment for our drug chemistry section of the crime lab and the latent print section. So for drug chemistry, we're looking to buy an instrument that's called a DART, or Direct Analysis in Real-Time Mass Spectrometry. This will be a significant improvement for our screening. So right now they use color tests to kind of see what route to test the drugs. This will give them more specific information on what the drug is and allow them to have quicker analysis and more accurate. So this will be really helpful for us as we just got accredited for testing. We're going to begin testing. So we have a limited number of staff, so this will kind of help us do more with less. And then in our latent print section, we're looking for to increase our capacity to process guns for latent prints. What we do is we have chambers that we fume them that allows us to develop latent prints. We process a lot of guns. So this will be an increase in capacity at the lab. We'll also have a portable chamber that we can bring out to the field if necessary. And then we're also going to upgrade our image capture. So when we develop the print, we take a picture of it and put it into the APHIS database for searching. So this will allow us to upgrade that, which is about 20 years old. So those are kind of the purposes of the grant and how we're going to use the funding, and if you have any questions.
Vice Chair Dorsey.
Thank you, Chair Chan. I am happy to support this. Obviously, it's as a grant, we're not going to say no. The one thing I wanted to ask about was mass spectrometry. I know that in other policy realms, I've been working with President Mandelman on the possibility of doing wastewater drug testing. I think I've also had this come up in the context of drugs that we're checking for in the drug supply with the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner. I'm aware that we do, we have HSA now, I think, does some evaluation for as a condition of benefits. I don't know if that includes drug testing, but I know we have contingency management programs that do drug screening. It's from what I understand, mass spectrometry, I've got to learn to pronounce this, is the gold standard. One other thing that I have hopes for in mass spectrometry, there I said it right, is expanding this to drug checking. For example, people who there is a harm reduction approach that I think we should probably be doing for people who go to nightclubs or the raves, and if they want to check, no questions asked, to make sure that what they think is ecstasy is not fentanyl, for example. There's a lot of applications as a city where we might want to make investments in this technology. Is this something that do the toxicologists talk to one another across city agencies on this, what technologies we have?
I know Luke Rota, he's the director of the ME's office tox lab. So we're pretty friendly, and we're both part of professional organizations together. So he's really testing from body fluids, mm-hmm. and our lab will be kind of testing from seized drugs. So kind of different realms of the same thing, but you're right. Mass spectrometry is the gold standard,
and it is something, as I understand it, where it's your results are near real time. I mean, this is something where we're not getting. It doesn't take. We don't have to send it out to a lab and then have it come back in a week.
So this instrument would be in real time, but it would be one step of the process. So it would kind of guide our further testing route to get results out as fast as possible. So for the best practice is to have a few different kinds of tests to confirm a drug, at least for the solid phase. This instrument is a lab-based instrument, but there are portable devices available. But the limitations of those is that if it's a mixture of compounds, then it cannot. Sometimes it's not as good at seeing those low-level compounds, which is what you'd probably be worried about as far as like a contaminated drug.
Right. Okay. As a budget matter, I don't want to take up a lot of time with this. It was just it's something that every time this comes up, I think there is a lot of applications in a lot of city departments in the era that we're in. So I just wanted to ask about that, but I'm happy to support this.
Thanks.
Thank you. Well, finally, CSI turning into 21st century. We appreciate that. Let's go to public comment on this item.
Yes, we have any members of the public who wish to address this committee regarding this item number 8. Now is your opportunity. Madam Chair, we have no speakers.
Seeing no public comments, public comments is now closed. What is your will, Supervisor Dorsey?
I would like to make a motion to approve this grant and send it to our full board with positive recommendation.
Roll call, please.
And on that motion by Vice Chair Dorsey to forward this resolution to the full board with a positive recommendation, Vice Chair Dorsey. Dorsey, aye. Member Sauter. Sauter, aye. Chair Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. We have 3 ayes.
The motion passes. Thank you. Mr. Clerk, do we have any other business before us today?
Madam Chair, that completes our business.
The meeting is adjourned.